Hello, everybody. My name is Kara Burrell. Sometimes I go by Nuance Ho. And today I just wanted to touch on the horrific shooting that happened in Michigan and do some responses and some commentary, because as it seems right now, it feels like Mormon apologists have decided to kind of go all in on who they seek to blame and pointing the finger at so-called anti-Mormons, ex-Mormon content creators, for the shooting in Michigan. So it saddens me, and I want to kind of get a 10,000 foot view, expand the conversation here, because I don't want to use something so tragic as a reason to exploit and make commentary and content. I want to start a conversation. Don't like the people who look at tragedies and say, oh, let's not let this go to waste. That's not what I want to do today. I want to touch on this Mormon Stories episode that John just did, where he brought on a great panel of people. I think the name of the episode is Are Anti-Mormons or Mark Driscoll Responsible for Charlie Kirk and Michigan LDS Killings? And Mark Driscoll is a famous Christian pastor who doesn't think very highly of Mormonism. Most pastors don't. So I want to play some clips from the episode in a second. People who are defenders of the LDS faith are naming names. They're blaming this whole entire content creating space as participants in an act of murder, it sounds like. If I got that wrong, if I'm strawmanning something, please let me know. But that seems like I'm going to need to come on camera and have a conversation with this. They're blaming anti-Mormons. So Mormon Stories highlighted this post from Jeremy Reynolds, who is the author of the CES letter. And if faithful Mormons had to point to a central figure of anti-Mormonism, this is not me speaking, if they were to do that, Jeremy would probably be at the top of the list. But he made this really beautiful statement that I just want to amplify, because when it comes to this very tragic shooting in Michigan at this LDS Ward building, I couldn't have said it better myself. I'm not on social media much nowadays, but I had to come back on due to the absolutely horrible tragedy that occurred in Michigan yesterday. If you notice, I've been absent for a while. I also set up my studio because I have some commentary. Same, same, Jeremy. What happened yesterday is absolutely heartbreaking and absolutely unacceptable. Places of worship should not be places that you wonder if you'll be attacked or die in, and the line that was crossed yesterday is devastating. It's no secret that I no longer identify as LDS or believe in the truth claims of the faith, but in a strange and paradoxical way, I still identify with the people. Same. I live in Utah. I have believing family members and friends, and I've been around members my entire life. They are my tribe, and if the world was insane and united against them to harm them, I'd absolutely be on the front lines with the tribe to defend them. And that's where I kind of want to pause and just say that as somebody who helps people deconstruct the truth claims of Mormonism, it's part of my job for the last 5 years, there's kind of two different camps. There's sometimes the camp of like where people just want, you know, if you're never Mormon watching Mormon content and you're just there for the freak show, pay a nickel and go in and hoot and holler at the freak show of Mormonism. There's definitely that angle. I've tried not to do that angle. I've tried to make content for people who have been in my position. The times in which that I've done that, I somewhat regret. Some of them are funny, but we'll get into what helpful critique really looks like in this discussion I want to have right now. But I absolutely agree with what Jeremy said here is Mormons are still my tribe. It kind of feels like if somebody made fun of your brother or sister and called them names, and it's like you've called them those names yourself. But if somebody else does it who's not in your family, it's like, get lost. That's my brother. Jeremy goes on to say, the attack yesterday felt very personal. I'm very sad for the folks in the Michigan Stake Center and their families. I'm very sad for the members in general during this difficult time with the loss of President Nelson and this horrible event that hit home. Yes, we can disagree and we can debate in the arena of ideas and words about the Book of Abraham and the Book of Mormon anachronisms and this and that and that and this. But at the end of the day, these folks are my family and friends. They're my home. They're people that I trust my life, my family, and property with. They are my tribe, and I'm just so sad and devastated with them today. Yep. Now, as far as blame coming from Mormons and where they are assigning it, I've got a few examples to go through. Let's start with this one. This is low-hanging fruit, honestly. This is the type of thing that we're seeing.
anti-Mormonism is sort of like this fundamental bigotry because it's based purely on like those people think weird things. And like, that's it. They don't even try to do something with like that they do with the Jews where they say, oh, they use the blood of children for their Passover bread meal or something like that. No, it's just like, no, they think Jesus and Satan are brothers. Therefore, got to put the 9mm in the belt when I go preach to them. Like, what the heck is going on here?
So I have cried. I have thought long and hard about what I want to say here. And it's still me coming out with the, I empathize with the Mormon community as the day is long. And let's not confuse that with controlling what we can say. Because that's where I think the double standards get really interesting. Because these are like the same guys who will defend their leaders no matter what. Like when Brigham Young was calling for a blood atonement. Oh, we have to look at the context. Modern prophets banning black people. And until 1978, that was a different time. But one ex-Mormon says, hey, you know, the temple felt like a cult. I felt like I was in a cult. Then suddenly, now that's hate speech. And that's responsible for mass murder. And it's just like, cut me a break, you know?
It's like, I guess what's frustrating too is it's like, how do you have a conversation with people this illogical or dumb?
Well, you
can't.
Like,
how do you have a, I cannot approach a conversation with you in good faith because I don't trust that you have the intellect to absorb it. That's probably a little.
No. Listen, if you come from a place of irrationality or not reason, you can't, their basis, their premise is not based in reason. So you can't reason your way out of that.
Just Mormon podcasting bros who spent years demonizing apostates, and then suddenly they pretended like they've never said a violent word, a harsh word in their lives, you know. I understand apologists. I used to be like unto one, you know, when you believe in something and you put your full heart into it. But it does matter when people who have built their entire platform calling ex-Mormons bitter and deceived and following Satan and possessed, all of those things. There is a reality check that I do think needs to be in order. Analyzing your upbringing is not persecution of anyone else. And saying that Joseph Smith was a con man, that is not violence, because there is religious persecution and there's also a mind controlling cult that some of us have had to unfuck our entire brains from, that has done some good things, but also has done some bad things. And let's not pretend that ex-Mormons are coming in here on the offensive attacking God's one true church. Because when you believe it's the one true church, you do feel like you're always going to be attacked, which is something I want to talk about more in a second. So yes, I think we condemn murder. I think that we all do. And you can still tell the truth about how Mormonism operates. Both things are true. Both things need to be said. So to all the apologists out there, I don't want to pretend that the problem is ex-Mormons with podcasts.
Members of the church, this is not the first time this sort of thing has happened. It will not be the last time. With what is happening on social media, with just horrific, continual, perpetual mischaracterizations, misrepresentations by anti-Mormons who are purposely trying to demonstrate the church to be misrepresented and presented in terrible ways. There are people making content, and this content has millions and millions and millions of views, that absolutely demonizes and misrepresents what the church teaches, what it's about, mischaracterizing the members and the doctrines. And it is getting worse and it is picking up. And based on the videos that I've seen by these anti-Mormons, the way that they're portraying our beliefs and our practices, I am not in the least bit surprised of anything like this happening and more of it happening in the future. If I believed even a tenth of what is being portrayed in these anti-Mormon videos, I would not let my family associate with members of the church. And you can very easily see how someone could justify this sort of thing based on what a lot of these creators are posting online, which so horribly misrepresents and mischaracterizes our teachings and practice and the way we live our life. The way that they worded this in the article, in the Wall Street Journal, it says, ExMo influencers mount a war against the Mormon Church. And it starts with information. And this is where this sort of thing leads annually.
Yeah, so that's a real vibe right now. That's from Dr. Richard Wadsworth on TikTok. And I've interacted with him a bit. And I thought that he would have a little bit better take than that. It's not surprising. I feel like it's coming from a real trauma response place. You've got people literally saying that this happened because TikTokers told their story. That's people are telling their story and things like this are going to happen. So there's some anti-Mormon type content that I would never make that I don't agree with. But I don't think this is the tone. I don't think this is it. So the panel does a great job in this Mormon Stories episode discussing like what even is an anti-Mormon. So let's play this clip.
And so I remember people giving me anti-Mormon pamphlets, reading them. Like, oh my gosh, this is so anti-Mormon. This is so anti. Well, it turns out that anti-Mormon is Mormon. It's just Mormon history.
So like, yeah, 10, 15, 20 years ago, if you claim that Joseph Smith translated the Book of Mormon with a rock and a hat,
yeah,
you would be called anti-Mormon. Yes. If you claim that Joseph Smith had 30 wives and married a 14-year-old or whatever, you'd be called anti-Mormon. Yes. In fact, many people who have stumbled on the church's gospel topics essays, when they're shown the gospel topics essays, they don't believe that they've been authored by and approved by the church. Active believing Orthodox faithful Mormons in 2025 will refer to today's current gospel topics essays as
anti-Mormon.
Anti-Mormon. Yeah. Am I wrong?
Yeah, like,
anti-Mormon. There are people who won't read them because it's like, no, they're on churchofjesuschrist.org. Like, how can that be? It's published by the church.
So it's a super problematic term just because, like, what does it mean? And it's been so misused and watered down. It basically means, someone who's saying something about the church that I don't like or information about the church that makes me feel uncomfortable and being repetitive. But that's like over the past 100 years. And like, who are the biggest anti-Mormons in history? Like Fawn Brody, like she's David O. McKay's niece. Her biography's been vindicated. No Man Knows My History. She would be listed in the Hall of Fame top 10 anti-Mormons when really she was just trying to create the most accurate biography that she could.
Yes.
Sandra and Gerald Tanner have been vindicated. Their scholarship is almost flawless, like as close to flawless as any prolific scholar, I think, out there.
So where Dr. Wadsworth could have been like, but obviously the shooter is responsible for the shooting. And it's not just ex-Mormons talking about their childhood trauma, you know, doesn't mention the shooter's culpability or like the wider culture that I want to get into today. Cause, the tension is hot all around because apparently this 40-year-old Iraqi war veteran with clear mental health issues wasn't responsible. I have a hard time believing that anyone believes that, you know? No, it was the fault of the woman who made a YouTube video explaining things that are published on the church's website. I don't want to go there. So let me say this as clear as possible, though. Murder is bad. Murder is wrong. It's immoral. It's unethical. And nobody should do it. But it's also true that the LDS Church has been spiritually and psychologically abusive to millions of people. It's done some great things, some humanitarian things. All religions have their problems, but ex-Mormons have every right to say what their experiences are. And I think we live in a fantasy world if the church can't take criticism and that just becomes off limits because a violent lunatic has done what he's done. And I think the correct perspective is condemning what happened, but also I will keep telling the truth about Mormonism. And I don't think that there's any contradiction there. So that's not what apologists want, though. They want to say, take this tragedy and be like, see, this is what happens when podcasts talk about Joseph Smith's sex life. And that's somehow like an indictment for violence. All right. So that's my piece on that. Moving on to the facts as we know them so far. This is just the overview of kind of what's been going on. September 10th, 2025, Charlie Kirk, conservative influencer, was assassinated at Utah Valley University in Orem, where I attended college. And the alleged shooter is Tyler Robinson, underline alleged, who was raised LDS in the St. George area. 18 days later in Grand Blanc, Michigan, a man identified as Thomas Jacob Stanford drove a truck into an LDS church during service, set the building on fire, opened fire on the congregation, killed multiple people, wounded others, and died in a shootout with police. Local reporting says he was a 40-year-old Iraqi war veteran and had lived in Utah for a period, had an LDS girlfriend at some point, perhaps, and had expressed illicit hatred for the LDS church, including calling Mormons the Antichrist. Those details are on record from interviews with people who met with him days before the attack, and was in shock for many days after that shooting. And I'll talk about it more in a second. But as far as the Tyler Robinson piece goes, the facts that I can't prove yet are that Tyler was a patsy. But if you want me to make an entire other video about my theories that are absolutely true and will absolutely put me on a list about what really happened that I think, I would be happy to do so. But everyone, we start with the obvious baseline, that the shooting was horrific. Murder is wrong. Terrorizing families in a church is evil. Every decent person condemns it without qualification. So that shouldn't need to be said, but just as a reminder. So murder, the most horrific way to express your hatred for somebody. I want to go down the list of the boiling pot that doth overflow. The reaction economy. I think I call it the conflict entrepreneurship that I want to go to hell. I hope it likes the irony while it's down there. So reaction economy. It's like the instant response online always for anything is a wave of blame and finger pointing and people just rushing to blame some ideological side based on, you know, whatever facts that they have before they're verified. And then some details trickle out and people blame opposite sides. And it feels exhausting watching the same pattern every time when something awful happens. And people grab their villain and they stoke their fear and everyone just revels in hate. And creators in the Mormon and ex-Mormon space are kind of calling this out. And I want to add to this voice because I think the responsible thing to do is to, you know, don't scapegoat entire groups. Condemn violence. Mormon Stories touches on this, and I want to go into this as well, that scholarly or personal critique for Judaism or Christianity or Islam and Mormonism can be done respectfully, and treating Mormonism as off-limits would be disrespectful. I think the grown-up stance is that history can be discussed without equating scrutiny with bigotry. I hope we can all agree that that's how honest discourse works. That's human when people feel like their community is under attack, that they react emotionally and they dig in. And the instinct, yes, is to defend your tribe. And I think that's ancient and it's not uniquely religious either. It's just human wiring, right? So the thing is, at some point, defending what you love turns into attacking whoever doesn't agree with you. And that is the loop religion and politics keeps falling into. And I haven't been on camera in a while. I actually don't like being on camera anymore. It's not my favorite thing. I wish I could just make a living writing Substack articles, but I can't. So here's my face. Here's me putting my name and face out there. I've had a lot of reflection over the last year or so that I haven't made a ton of content. I've spent a lot of time just with my kids and living in my values and doing my own thing and actually reconstructing a life after Mormonism instead of just talking about deconstruction all the time, right? Myself, I have a lot of things that I regret in the things I've said and done in the last 5 years. And it's interesting to hear John be so reflective about his role in possibly contributing to this and creating the type of word radios and Jacob Hansons of the world who then have to defend the church as a defense to what John DeLynn says or what somebody in my position might say. So it's really interesting. It's obviously good self-awareness, you know, that's kind of rare coming from men. Love you, John. But I think whether you are a Mormon apologist or an ex-Mormon YouTuber, that we are all playing in the same outrage economy. And we are all feeding off of clicks and the algorithm and the dopamine of being right about how wrong the other side is. And I get it when you've been through something that shaped your entire life. And then when you see others dismiss your experiences, you want to set the record straight. And the second it becomes really about winning and not understanding, I think humanity goes out the window. So this is where things get really interesting. So John finds this clip of Charlie Kirk talking about Catholicism, and they're playing this clip where Charlie Kirk, who's a guy who, you know, may he rest in peace, markets himself as having these Christian values and is over here talking about the Pope, who is like, to him, some demonic Marxist globalist lizard man. And it's interesting because if an ex-Mormon said the exact same words about the Mormon prophet, every single one of these apologist Mormons would be screaming that that's hate speech, that's incitement, that's anti-Mormon bigotry. But when Charlie is doing it about the Pope, suddenly it's fine. Suddenly it's just a theological disagreement. So it's interesting when people want to have it both ways. And you can kind of see the double two sides of this, that anti-Mormon content online is dangerous, and then turn around and then cheer on right-wing influencers calling like the head of the Catholic Church a false prophet when he mentions climate change. So yeah, double standards are very interesting to me when you see them in the wild.
Would you call him someone who's inciting violence and hate? So let's go ahead and roll the clip.
I want a better Catholic Church, and
Charlie Kirk.
I personally would not be able to be part of an institution with the figurehead with a worldview that is so corrupted and opposite of what I think the Bible teaches.
No, it's a little bit.
When was the last time the Pope
spoke ex cathedra? Vatican II is part of the
When was the last time? Like 50, 60 years?
The last probably ex cathedra infallible teachings from a Pope were probably Pope Pius IX, you know, like 150 years ago.
Okay, so then therefore there really is no functional use for a Pope for 150 years.
No, he's the leader of the Church, you know, he's the...
Exactly, your figurehead, your top leader is not good.
Mormonism's got a... I think if Mormonism wants to be around for a while, it's got to pull itself up by its big boy bootstraps. It's like that one friend who's like never had a breakup before. It's the first time and it's really devastating for them. That's me. I'm that person. So Charlie Kirk can literally sit on his podcast or wherever and say the Pope is a fraud. And then every conservative Mormon influencer who worships Charlie Kirk can still be friends and retweet him the next day. But if an ex-Mormon says, you know, the prophet isn't a prophet, they get doxxed and shunned and are called tools of Satan and all of that. So it's ironic that the Catholics have actually built in this mechanism, you know, for debate, that there's like a structure that allows for some inner conflict and argument, and that like they're not as scared of conversations. Mormons, not so much excommunicated, because I think that the Catholic Church, you know, it's survived wars and revolutions and reformations and had inquisitions, and they don't need to police every opinion just to keep their house standing. But Mormonism, it's still in its teenage years, I would say, by comparison. So this is, I'm so glad that John showed that clip. It's so perfect and kind of reaches into this broader, interesting debate and question about, you know, if somebody like Charlie Kirk, is he an anti-Catholic for saying what he said in that clip? For after the truth, if you defend free speech, you have to defend it even when it makes you uncomfortable. And if you condemn demonization, you have to condemn it even when it comes from somebody on your team. Otherwise, you're not defending values. You're just defending your team and your brand. And I think that is the whole problem with this new hybrid of politics and religion that we've got in America right now, where everybody is just playing for their team, which is just their ego. Where, you know, liberals say that conservatives are Nazis and evangelicals say Mormons are demons and Mormons say ex-Mormons are led by Satan. And everyone swears that they are the righteous victims in the middle of all of it. And this is the machinery of ideological thinking. Having strong beliefs necessarily isn't the problem. It's when they're so strong that they're just certain. It's the certainty. It's the moment you stop being curious. It's the moment you stop asking, could I be wrong? I think that's when you lose the plot. And the panel even said, someone quoted Eckhart Tolle that said, if you fight against something too long, you become the mirror image of what you hate. And I think that's it. With your heart, mind, body, and soul for what you're against, trying to destroy it. I'm saying this as an ex-Mormon content creator who's taken a lot of space. Trust me, I've gotten it wrong a lot of times in my past. I'm trying to do it right in my future. And I've seen this on every side of the debate, religious, political, the anti-cult people acting like a cult, the free thinkers acting like a cult, defenders of something becoming aggressors of something else. And then later in the panel, they play a clip from Mark Driscoll calling Mormonism a demonic cult, saying like, if you see a golden angel on the top of a temple, it's a demon taking dominion over that place. Tilly, I've never said anything that controversial. I have just talked about the handshakes that I had to do in the temple once. But Mark, that's free speech, but you should probably talk about like what Christ told you to do for immigrants and poor people. Just swap one of those out. I think you have better things to talk about than that when you're a pastor. Me, I got nothing better to talk about. Mark Driscoll saying stuff like there'll be zero Mormons in heaven and the conversation about what that anti-Mormon type of rhetoric, what does that do for people and contribute in the zeitgeist and contribute to violence, which I think I've said most of my piece on that. But I thought Mark Driscoll was a tool when I was Mormon, and I still think that way. So the broader picture, though, is like every side has its own acceptable form of demonization as long as it's aimed at the right enemy. People are desperate to pin the tail on the donkey of evil somewhere, and they need escape donkey that makes that chaos feel manageable. So if you can say that the killer was influenced by ex-leftism, ex-Mormons, Satan, whatever it is, then it's you get to stop thinking and you get to have your comfort and your certainty back. But I think the truth is always it's just messier and it's scarier that the number one pattern across all mass shootings isn't ideology. It's alienation. It's men. It's 98% of shooters are male who have no community, no belonging, no way to reach out for help with their mental health crisis and have way too much access to guns. And at this point, it is not a left or right thing that is such a distraction. It is a gigantic culture thing. And I think we have built a system that breeds loneliness and it rewards outrage. And it gives people infinite ways to be outraged and turn their pain into something more destructive. And when you ask, like, well, who radicalized that person? Who did that? The answer is really all of us. I'm glad that Mormon Stories brought up this kind of point that I want to go into. But it's been a bigger thing on my heart and mind with my sister who lives next door, something we've been talking about, and I want to frame it in a different way. So please stick with me. Don't let me lose you, okay? The ideas about tribalism, one of the antidotes to tribalism is not pretending that we all agree, but just not dehumanizing people, seeing each other as human beings. Another good quote from the episode is people make sense when you know their story. That, you know, if I were raised with their parents, their DNA, their teachers, I'd probably believe what they believe. I've always believed that. So, you know, that's empathy. That's taking, I think, the right perspective. And I think that is what's missing in religion and in politics and in media. But you can still have teams. You can still have your convictions. You can still be curious while having all of those things. Otherwise, I don't think that you're fighting for truth. You're just fighting for your ego. And I see that reflected in Mormon and ex-Mormon spaces. And I hope that we all can do better. Because one of the reasons why I like studying Mormonism is it's a microcosm of so many things. Deconstruction, ideas around that. It's just a microcosm for something bigger that I find fascinating. It's a cultural mirror for all of us because right now we're living in a world that is profitable to hate each other, where algorithms have admitted, the people who run these websites have admitted that they are rewarding anger. Politicians already feed on fear. Can't help those guys. But then we have our churches, now our influencers and the news outlets, all of them cashing in, on division. And I think the only way to really break out of that cycle that I have been stuck in, personally, from speaking from my experience, is that when ordinary, normal people, where you can't force a company to stop showing you those things, but when we actually take our power back and start choosing humanity, choosing community over just what's comfortable, what loyalty to our team and so forth, every person that you see online is a fully fledged human being. With a history, with a heartbeat. Nobody is a demon. Nobody deserves to die because of their beliefs. And so if you take anything away from what I'm saying here, this goes for both sides, is that we can't keep acting like enemies to defeat. We can't keep acting like people that are just disposable that we can scroll away from when we don't want to listen to them anymore. Yeah, the world's going to feel like a war zone if you're not actually trying to understand. And I think that's the evolution that religion was trying to lead us towards. Turns out it's a not true thing, so we got to do it ourselves. So let's criticize ideas and challenge power and tell the truth about history, but let's also build a culture where nobody's humanity is lost like it's collateral damage. I think that's the bridge. That's how we walkity walk our way forward. Because what's been really interesting is I moved. I live in a new place now. I live next to my sister. She's my best friend. She's what's called an esoteric Christian. And she looks at all of the mayhem that's been happening lately through the lens of the occult. And that means just symbols and prophecy and unforeseen forces that are coming into effect now. And me, I am a secular, spiritual, agnostic atheist. But the crazy thing is actually how much we get each other really perfectly, because we both are trying to describe the same phenomenon in different languages. The tools of influence, the mass media, the algorithm, the outrage that's all going on, that they all shape consciousness like magic, like real magic. Just it's industrial scale sorcery is what we would say. I first heard about the LDS church shooting in Michigan from her. And she was also the first person who called me about the Charlie Kirk assassination when that news broke. And, you know, we both felt the same thing, this sick, heavy drain in the air, that the sadness itself was siphoning our energy from us. And we're both ex-Mormons, but we both see ourselves sitting in those Michigan pews. That's our home state. It's personal, right? We're also kind of recovering conservatives too. So we know what the culture of paranoia and persecution from the inside, what that kind of feels like. And so when I look at all of the things that are going on as a secular atheist, and I'm trying to translate it into something for my sister to understand, or my Mormon mom, or like, you know, anybody, all I have to say is just, you know, I think we can all agree there's only us. There's only us in the occult, damn it, which is also us. So a man stopped me in the park last week to make some complimentary remarks about my online content. And, he said was actually definitely the most common thing that people say to me when walking up in public, which is leaning in close and whispering, "Hey, don't stop making content. Love what you do. Keep it up." And I'm a funny gal. If you know, you know. That's not why this dad encouraged me to keep going though. Do you think that he and his wife shook my hand because they love the way that I just slash and dash the church, as my mom would say? Or is it because I helped them break out of something and they're glad and they're thanking me for that help, and they hope that I help other people break out of this religion and this programming? He put it in a whisper though, because I'm an ex-Mormon content creator at a park in Utah County, which shows he's a thoughtful guy. So my response though to him was, like this. I don't think I can do it. You know how I do. Like, you guys saw my last episode of Mormon Stories with Rod Meldrum, right? You're familiar with the way that I get into that stance of like, I could be doing a lot of things right now, and I sure as hell don't want to be doing this. You know, that pose that I get in from time to time. As much as I would have loved to explain the following to him and his lovely wife at the skate park in front of the skater boys, I was not able to do it then. That would have been socially uncool. About the state of the world right now and what it's like making content about it is that it is exhausting. We are living through tragedy after tragedy, shootings and outrage and culture wars, and all of it just feels like it's accelerating. And the chaos feels like just the new background noise of existence. And I think we've all got this quiet question hanging above our heads of like, how the hell do we get out of this? And so going back to the Christian esotericism thing, I'm becoming more familiar with how many people view this as, you know, black magic and the deep state. And my version is chaos itself has become a technology. I think it's a product now. It's a system that violence and outrage and despair have become optimized for engagement, sadly. And we don't have mass rituals and temples anymore. We have algorithmic rituals on our screens. And each one feeds a god that doesn't want normal things. It's not 10% of your income. It just wants your life force. It wants your time. It wants your attention and your outrage. So I'm paying more attention to like the broader conversations about what's happening in Christian circles and calling this a cult or black magic, where I just feel like it's modern black magic. of the yesteryear has just modernized into technology. So what I hear as a spiritual atheist is that we've industrialized conscious control, that what priests and sorcerers once did with incense and blood offerings, media now does with our push notifications and culture wars and fear cycles. And it's the same old spells of repetition and spectacle and emotional arousal. And now it's 24/7 and it's monetized and it's optimized by machine learning. And even though it's like you can explain it literally and scientifically, it doesn't make it any less dark. And that is the collective shadow of humanity, that our own unconscious appetites turned into a business model. And that is what is spooky as hell. So I'm not saying, you know, turn off your phones and move into the woods, even though that would be nice. I would love to do that. I'd love to do that. What I am saying is that I do think we need to learn to recognize this system for what it is, that it is a machine that feeds on division and that we are participants in it. And me no likey. So until we do that, we're just going to keep being manipulated and think that that is what gives us meaning in life and then wonder why everything sucks. So whether you call it propaganda or an algorithm, whatever side of whatever you sit on, I think the cure is still the same: to remember that we are human beings and we are special sons and daughters and non-binary individuals of God or whatever entity you believe in, divinity at large. Seeing each other really breaks the spell, really breaks that darkness. It's not in the teams we choose and the opinions we have. It's in remembering that there's only us. I think that realization is, that's the powerful magic. So that is all I've got for you today. Hope you guys pick up what I'm putting down. I am about to start some interviews and get my podcast up and rolling. Thanks so much for tuning in. This was just kind of a quick improv video after watching that. And if you need community in the experiment space, if you're in Utah, in the Salt Lake area especially, and woman or non-binary or genderqueer individual specifically, I'm going to leave a link down below to Lost and Found Club. I went to their girls camp event. My friend Chelsea Homer helps run it and does a fantastic job. And I feel so fulfilled and loved. So they have all kinds of in-person events for men and women. So Lost and Found Club, I just want to make sure that they get some love and you guys go support them. If you're in the area, go follow them on Instagram and sign up for their emails. And I am doing some work with Britt Hartley. I'm taking a course through her and Jim Palmer and working on becoming a trip sitter. To help people with psychedelics in the future and some integration work and some secular spiritual direction. So that's what I've been spending a lot of my time doing. I just moved, just set up my new studio, and I also have 3 kids. So that's what I've been up to, but been stewing on a lot of these ideas in my head lately. Follow me on all the places. Anyone who's ever been a donor, donated to this channel throughout the years, and given me money, whether through Venmo or my nonprofit, humongous thank you. Brings me so much joy to know that I have support and had support in the past. I hope that you'll support me in the future as I rev up and make some more content that might be a little bit different than the content I made before, but hope y'all like it. Stuff that's more written on my heart, you could say. If you are a subscriber to this channel, thank you so much. I know that you want to be. I'll leave it there. I'm looking forward to reading your comments on this one, you guys. So hope we can keep the good conversation going. That's all for me today. Cara Burrell, Nuanto, signing out. And like I always say, don't let somebody else ruin your life. You ruin it for you.